welcome to NC Spin, an unrehearsed discussion about issues of interest to North Carolina. Now here's the host of NC Spin, Tom Campbell.
Thank you for tuning into this week's NC Spin. It was the week before Thanksgiving, and all through our state, the people were debating what to do on the big date. No gathering this year. What about the parade? The virus was raging and many were afraid. On this week's show, we update you on the latest of coronavirus and also cover several other topics we need to update you with. Plus, the panel's going to tell us something we don't know. Our panel this week includes Howard Lee, former state senator and cabinet officer in North Carolina, Becky Gray, senior vice president of the John Locke Foundation, Chris Fitzsimon, director of the state's newsroom, and John Hood, syndicated columnist and author. We're going to begin our uninterrupted discussion after these brief messages from our underwriters.
Farmville, steeped in Eastern Carolina tradition, yet surprisingly sophisticated. In Farmville, find a French bakery, a furniture school, glass blowing, great shops, and restaurants. East of I-95, in the middle of everything, find it first in Farmville.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever. And your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
The big issue in 2020 is healthcare. Let's talk basics. You are the key to your own personal health, but there is strong evidence that if you have a relationship with a family physician, your quality of life will be better. You'll likely live longer, and you'll have 33% lower healthcare costs. Your family doctor knows you, has your medical history, and can quickly diagnose health problems. Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air, and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com.
We now return to NC Spin.
Let's begin the spin. We haven't seen surges like this. Our seven-day rolling averages indicate 3,000, or in this instance, 4,000 new cases a day, an all-time high hospitalizations, and a positive test rate that's turned from 5 to almost 9%. Question to Becky. Harvard University recently did a study in the United States, and they said, particularly of all 100 counties in our state, that we've reached a tipping point in North Carolina. More rural counties that have largely been spared from community spread are now surging. Why?
Well, probably a variety of reasons, Tom. One is of the 10 red-coded counties in North Carolina, 8 of them have state prisons, and we've seen the problems in the prisons and the spread there. Also with congregate living facilities, long-term care facilities, and a couple of these red-coded counties, at least one in Wilson County, there's a veterans nursing home there and other long-term cares like that. In the rural parts of the country, the rural parts of our state, people have been outside during the warm weather. As things are getting colder, they're moving inside. Also, what we know in the rural parts of the state is for many populations, they're older and have more underlying conditions, whether it's diabetes or weight issues or those kind of things. So I think it's a combination of things, of the reasons why we're seeing the surge in the rural counties, certainly something to be concerned about as we're seeing this across the state.
But John, Secretary Cohen, in an interview I did with her this week, says that This dramatic rise is largely being caused by social gatherings, not schools, not churches, not athletic events, social gatherings that people are having. Also, as I said before, it's spiking in rural areas and in the 18 to 49-year-old population. What does that tell us?
Well, there's a lot of different ways to read the data, but the main thing, what Becky said earlier, which I think is very consistent with what Dr. Cohen said, is that colder weather moves things inside that have been happening outside, including family gatherings, small group gatherings. And when you get into a small building or a small room with not adequate ventilation, you're going to have more spread than when people were outside or in other kinds of facilities. Schools and colleges, for the to a large extent, with lots of precautions and not having people in the same room all day long together and so forth, haven't had as much of a role to play in this. There have been cases in all of these institutions, of course, but the gatherings in small spaces because the weather is getting colder is something that you can see not just around our state or around our country, but around the world.
Chris, prior to this past week, we were hearing the numbers of how many new cases we were getting and so forth each week. The secretary and DHHS instituted a new county alert system this week in which there are red counties which have unusually high spread going on, hospitalizations, percent positive testing. Orange counties, which don't have quite as much, they're still elevated, but not quite as much. And then yellow counties. What do you think of this system? Does this help us understand more about where it is and what's going on?
Well, I think the more information, the better. So good. Good for the state for sending this information out. We're still living through one of the most bizarre times in our lifetime, however, when we still have a lot of our country's leaders and sometimes state leaders not emphasizing how safe we should be. The difference, I think it's really important this week to talk about, there's a light now at the end of the tunnel. The vaccine is coming in the spring and the summer, whenever it is. We know that this is all ending if we could all rally around each other. And again, I think I said this last week, I'm really disappointed there's no bipartisan effort on the state level, certainly on the national level, to try to convince people if we can just hang on and be smart, do smart things, wear masks, right, do all these things. We can get through this with fewer people dying. But the answer, sadly, is political division and nothing from Washington to help us all.
So far as it goes, Howard, we're seeing 4,000 cases in a day. I mean, I can remember it's been, what, just a matter of weeks that we were alarmed if we had 1,000 or 1,500 cases a day. This new system is helping. But if these numbers continue to rise as rapidly as they have, there's some concern we may have to roll back some of the relaxations that have been given. And, of course, everybody's going to blame Governor Cooper for doing it. But in truth, shouldn't we be blaming ourselves for not wearing masks and keeping our distances?
Well, I think there's no question that people are resisting living up to the responsibility to wear a mask, protect themselves, and take some responsibility for protecting their neighbors. I think there is no question in my mind that the spark in the rural areas certainly was exacerbated by all of those Trump rallies that were held, people driving in from those rural areas and then going back home and not wearing the mask when they get back home, not keeping social distances. I've been extremely disappointed in the fact that we have not, as Chris said, rallied around as bipartisans to make sure that people live up to a standard and protect themselves and others. And I think the system that is in place now gives us an indication of where the problems are so we can take more decisive action. And if rolling back is one of those actions, let so be it. I think we've got to be careful to make sure that people are healthy and protected.
Becky, the secretary was careful to say that even though we don't have full results from all the kids going back to the classroom, the evidence so far indicates that these increased cases are not coming from children in our classrooms. Good news?
Well, that's been part of the data and part of the thing that we know about the disease from the beginning is the most vulnerable population are older folks and people with underlying medical conditions. School-age kids, particularly K-12 kids, are not impacted by the disease as much as older people are. So we've always known that the school population, the students, have been have been the safer part of the populations. But then, of course, we have the teachers in the personnel in the classrooms and in the schools that are a concern. But this is not anything new. We've known this from the beginning. As we get more information about the disease and how to treat it and who the most vulnerable people are, you know, we can have those restrictions and those suggestions and that advice of how best to help those folks. But we have known this from the beginning, that actually the risk to school children is very low.
Howard, you live in Chapel Hill, and you're getting ready to see a mass exodus from your community here in the coming few days as all the students finish their semester and go back home. There are some universities that are saying, we want to test these students before they leave, and then we want to test them again before they come back on campus. What do you think of that?
I think that makes a lot of sense. We have to be very vigilant in finding out where this virus is, who the carriers are, and being able to take the decisive action in order to protect the general population. So I'm very much in favor of the testing regimen, because to me, that is the only way we can now determine how to act in response to it.
And John Duke is a poster child for what you should do if you're a college or a university. I mean, they have had just only 84 cases of staff and students on campus during this fall semester. Now, they've been testing the heck out of them. 162 tests have been given to staff and students during this year, including when they leave and when they come back. Should State and Carolina follow this?
State and Carolina should have followed these kinds of procedures. Remember, it isn't just Duke. Virtually all the campuses in North Carolina are open. It's really just three that closed. They had not prepared adequately for the situation. They had not fully expected what had happened. I think they will be back in the spring, similar to Wake Forest, similar to Davidson, similar to Duke, similar to High Point, other campuses that have gotten this right, including most of the UNC campuses, where there have not been large-scale outbreaks right on any of the UNC campuses that have remained open.
So, Chris, Secretary Cohen, we said, okay, what's your best advice for Thanksgiving? And this was sort of memorable, I thought. She said, number one, keep it small. Whatever gathering you're going to be in, keep it small. Number two, keep it outdoors. Number three, wear your masks, except when you're trying to eat the turkey. And number four, get tested beforehand so you can find out more about what you're getting into. Good advice?
Yeah, all good advice. I mean, I think that, you know, again, this is the, you know, hopefully, and I think it all evidence indicates that this is the last time. Christmas, Thanksgiving and Christmas are going to be very difficult for people who want to be together, who want to have large family gatherings. If we can just get through this as a state, as a community, help is coming. Next Thanksgiving, we'll all have been vaccinated. We'll be able to resume our normal activities, but we have to pull together now. You know, it is true that most of the people who are affected are older, but I think I said last week on the show to remind people, I think almost one out of four people who have been hospitalized in North Carolina who are hospitalized are under 45 years old, under 50 years old. This is not just an older disease. Now, a lot of people are, maybe not quite as many people percentage-wise are dying, but a lot are dying, a lot are suffering. I'm worried we're sort of at the tail end of this. If we can just hold on, I think a lot more people will survive this and we'll be better off.
We hope we're at the tail end of this, because we're not going to really get there until these vaccines get
That's
available.
Right.
Howard, we know that there are been reports about 1.1 million North Carolinians having food hardships in this season of the year. And we're told that some 300 to 400,000 people in our state are facing evictions. The help from Washington has stopped. Should there be, I mean, what can we do to get the Congress to help us more to avoid some of these hardships? It's bad enough to have to fight the virus, but this too.
I think it is very unfortunate that so many of our leaders don't seem to be in touch with reality based on the experiences of their constituency. I just don't see the fight in Washington. But it seems to me that we have to talk to our legislators, all of us across this country, and help them understand that compromise is a whole lot better than being stalemated. So I just am disappointed with our leadership during this this crisis. There are a lot of hungry people, and I see them practically every day as I move around,
yeah,
who need this help badly.
Becky, very quickly, if we don't get this under control, if this continues to really spike. And by the way, Don Vaughn did a nice piece in the News and Observer today comparing North Carolina with other southern states. And comparatively, we compare pretty well to these other southern states so far as deaths, number of cases, and so forth per 100,000. But let's say we don't do this and we have to roll back some restrictions. Will North Carolina stand for that?
Well, I think there'll be a lot of resistance to it. I mean, Tom, one of the things that we've talked about today has been the health risk, and they are real and they're serious, and I think everybody agrees with that. But there's also real economic risk. And as this thing continues, and as you continue, when you close the state down, you're closing businesses down. And the issue of people not being able to afford food, of people not being able to afford their rent, you know, a lot of these problems would be solved when the economy gets back up and running and people are back to work. And they're earning money
but
and not
pretty,
dependent on government
there's
to help.
Pretty
so
general,
that's part of the solution.
Yeah, but there's pretty general agreement that we ain't going to fix the economy until we do better so far as the recovery of the virus is concerned. If you've been watching NC SPIN much recently, you know that we have spent an inordinate amount of time on the elections and the virus. In the meantime, there have been a number of subjects which we think deserve some discussion, and we couldn't get to them. So on this show, we want to raise some of them. And let's start with the back and forth leads of our Chief Justice of the Supreme Court election. Paul Newby and Sherry Beasley have each taken and lost the leads in recent days. We learned that Washington County had counted mail-in votes twice. Robeson County failed to count votes from an early voting site. The last report had Newby leading by some 400 votes. Howard, with these revelations, should we be concerned our votes are not being accurately counted? In other words, is there a problem with our election system and our tallying system in North Carolina?
Well, I think we've long had a problem with our election system with regards to the equipment we use and the process we use to go about it. But there is some good news in all of this, and that is we had more people turning out to vote this year than I can remember over the years. And I'm delighted that occurred. I do think, however, that if there are mistakes and if there are accusations of fraud or in responsibility, it's human error and not necessarily a problem with the system per se. So, no, I don't think we need to change the system. I think we just need to tweak it as we go forward.
John, Cherry Beasley has filed protest in all the counties in North Carolina for the recount, which is now going on. Is this recount going to change? I mean, very, very seldom do we see even 400 vote leads change, right?
That's correct. And of course, it can go either way. I mean, you shouldn't assume that a recount will necessarily shrink the margin. It could add to the margin. We don't know. Beasley's argument is that there were actually thousands of ballots, provisional ballots, that were turned in that should have been counted, but Democratic-controlled county boards of election refused to count them. So that's the claim. The evidence doesn't seem very strong right now. But I think you've got two different things. You've got the recount, which is very unlikely to change the outcome. But you also have these legal arguments, both from Newby and from Beasley. Newby made some arguments earlier that it could also be adjudicated if the lead shifts. These legal arguments may take a while to resolve. And even once they get resolved, people may never be fully sure. You know, Tom, we have seen a farce, an absolute farce in Washington with claims about voter fraud that Donald Trump and his folks have made that are ridiculous. This is a case where you have a very small number of votes, a few hundred votes, that not so much fraud, though that's possible, but various kinds of mistakes or people voting when they shouldn't or people's ballots not counting when they should have counted. That's where this really matters.
Yes.
This is where we need precautions against illegal votes and precautions against people's votes being suppressed, because when you have an election this close, unlike in the presidential race, then these arguments actually have force.
And sadly, these things that are taking place undermine the confidence in our election system. And you know, as we've said many times on this show, there may be some instances where things don't get counted properly or what, but they're very, very small, with the exception of in 2018 when we had that election in the 9th Congressional District. Chris, right before the election, a group of protesters went to Alamance County in Graham and were protesting. They were sprayed with tear gas. Did the officers react properly? Tell us what your take is on this situation.
There were women and children. There were children in that protest. There didn't seem to be, the video, if you watch it, there doesn't seem to be any threat to the physical safety of the officers or the buildings there. I was shocked, actually, that we were using tear gas in that manner. There are a lot of other ways to control a crowd. This has been the source of sight of a lot of protests. I thought that was very troubling, and I hope that we'll continue to get to the bottom of what happened and who was responsible.
Becky, another story that we have not commented on, but I think deserves some mention, and that is that members of the East Carolina women's swim team and diving teams and tennis teams are considering a class action lawsuit because their campus, East Carolina University, has done away with their sports now. Women are 57% of the student body at East Carolina, and they're claiming Title IX violations. What's your take on that one?
Well, I understand the complaint. I understand the purpose of Title IX was to ensure that there was equality in the sports programs and universities. I mean, I understand all that. I think the timing on this is terrible. I mean, right now, you know, the sports programs, the universities themselves, you mentioned earlier, just the testing and the students and the challenges that the that the universities are facing. I think the timing on this is just is clumsy at best and terrible at worst.
I want to ask John and Chris this because both of you are journalists, have been in your careers journalists. The News and Observer, among other papers, is asking for contributions to keep their paper afloat. Now, they're charging ad rates, they're charging subscription prices. They now say they'd like for the public to donate to them to help keep journalism and free speech afloat. John, what's your take on that?
I entirely agree that there are certain kinds of public service journalism that used to be funded with ad revenue and subscriber revenue that is now going to have to be funded with contributions. Some people want the government to fund it. I think that would be a horrible idea. So the alternative is people giving to nonprofit entities and to various kinds of hybrid entities in order to support journalism.
You support the effort, Chris?
I think that John is right. We're still figuring out what the model is for journalism. I support the News and Observer. I'm a subscriber. I think people should subscribe to their local papers if they have to raise additional money. But John is also right. I actually run a national nonprofit with people in 20 states now. We're going to have to figure out a way to support journalism. I'm not so sure the government should do it either. But we cannot let local and state journalism, we can hear all we want about Congress and President Trump. The reason we know about our communities is local and state journalists, we have to figure out a way to keep supporting them.
We finally found something that John and Chris agree with. Howard, let me move over to this. You were mayor of Chapel Hill many decades ago, I might say. There are a lot of our towns in North Carolina that are in trouble, and our local government commission is threatening to come in and take over some of these towns financially because financially they're not reporting correctly and doing as they should. What do you think about the aspect of the LGC taking over these towns?
Well, I certainly think it's something that should be under consideration because there are a number of municipalities that are really struggling. First, they can't hire the appropriate staff to run the town. And second, it seems to me that their tax base is diminishing, which creates problems. So I think it's a good direction to consider. I'm not ready to sign off that this should be executed at the moment, but certainly we've got to take a closer look at propping these towns up.
Becky, I need about a 20-second answer here. The Department of Motor Vehicles is making its move to Rocky Mount. A third of the 495 employees they've got have said they ain't going to move. What do you think of that move?
You know, Tom, this happens all the time in the private sector where companies make decisions to change headquarters or close one office and open another one, and employees have to make decisions. And this is what's happening with the DMV. And, you know, employees deal with this all the time in the private market. And
This is
something these public employees are going to have to make decisions best for them.
Let's move to tell us something we don't know. Chris Fitzsimon, I'll start with you.
State Senator Wiley Nickel filed paperwork this past week for Congress for a district that doesn't exist. He wants to represent the 14th Congressional District in North Carolina. We don't know for sure. We're likely to get one. We don't know where it's going to be. One of the odder events, I think, in North Carolina's recent political history.
Have desire, will move. Is that what he's saying?
Well, he's saying he's running, and we don't know for what.
Yeah. John Hood, tell us something we don't know.
According to a survey by Best Life magazine, North Carolina is the least hated state in the South. One of the least hated states in the country. They also looked at which states dislike the most. North Carolinians dislike South Carolina the most. South Carolinians dislike Ohio the most.
Go figure.
Go figure.
I like calling North Carolina home. Howard Lee, tell us something we don't know.
I'm the proud father of two daughters who are strong black women. And this year, we have seen the emergence of black women coming from behind the throne to sitting on the throne with the success. And I'm just delighted to see that this is changing now.
Yeah, and you yourself have been quite a force in moving for racial equality and for sexual equality also. Becky Gray, tell us something we don't know.
Well, Tom, as we continue to deal with the COVID pandemic and the impacts of that, I think never more has internet connection and broadband connection been more important, and is going to be even more important as we work our way out of this. The General Assembly in allocating the COVID money from Congress allocated $30 million to boost broadband. We need that. We need a whole lot more to ensure North Carolinians across the state are connected.
Great point. Well, you've heard our spin on the issues of the day. To stay informed all during the week, sign up for our free weekly email newsletter, give your feedback, and read my weekly column. Visit our website, ncspin.com, or catch NCSPIN on Facebook. Next week, we've got a really special Thanksgiving edition for you with one of our state's leading economists, one of our state's leading historians, looking at yesterday, today, and tomorrow in North Carolina. So be sure to join us next week with more balanced debate for the Old North State. Until then, stay informed, have a nice Thanksgiving, and watch out for the spin.
Farmville, steeped in Eastern Carolina tradition, yet surprisingly sophisticated. In Farmville, find a French bakery, a furniture school, glass blowing, great shops, and restaurants. East of I-95, in the middle of everything, find it first in Farmville.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever. And your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
The big issue in 2020 is healthcare. Let's talk basics. You are the key to your own personal health, but there is strong evidence that if you have a relationship with a family physician, your quality of life will be better. You'll likely live longer, and you'll have 33% lower healthcare costs. Your family doctor knows you, has your medical history, and can quickly diagnose health problems. Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Join us next week and get the spin on issues facing our state. For more information or to learn how to contact us, visit our website, ncspin.com. NC Spin is a copyrighted production of Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated.